Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining us. I'm delighted to be chatting today about a film called, a short film, Amissa Anima. Hard-hitting short film, brilliantly made short film, actually. And I'm delighted to introduce to you Tatiana Doroshenko. She is the director and co-screenplay writer, I believe. We've got Katrina Matheson as the producer, and Eloy Ryan is the DOP on this. So thank you very much for joining us, and congratulations on this brilliant short film.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tex.
I'm glad to be here, yeah.
Thank you. I'll read the synopsis, the brief synopsis. Four boys survive on the seedy nights of St Kilda's Red Light District in Australia in the 1980s, based on true events. In actual fact, Tatiana goes into great detail on Film Freeway about it. Well, actually, Tatiana, if I could move on to you first and just tell us a little bit about how you came to make this film, because this area, I didn't know about this area in Australia, of course. I was ignorant too until I'd seen the film. And as I said, quite hard hitting. But could you just give us an idea of, you know, what brought you to want to make this project and how it all happened? And then and perhaps we can bring Katrina in as well.
I grew up in St Kilda. St Kilda's like our kind of, it's the red light district. It's also traditionally kind of like the holiday area in the city by the beach.
Yeah.
So it's sort of where, even from settlement, it was always the place where you'd go to the seaside and, you know, entertainment district with a big Palais Theatre there in Luna Park, etc. So I grew up there as a kid. It's also an arts. A lot of artists live there, and my parents are East European migrants from Second World War, and as artists we lived there.
Yeah.
But there's a whole mess of people too. But obviously with the red light district, there's a lot of street kids as well, and poverty that ends up being attracted there as well. So we grew up there, I saw lots of stuff going on. A lot of people report stuff that went on with the pedophile rings, and it did come out. And with other, you know, there was all sorts of other, you know, drug use and stuff on the streets, obvious, yeah. And prostitution, etc. But a lot of us knew this stuff was going on around this toilet block, and we saw evidence in it with the street kids and the kids we knew, little bits and pieces, but we never quite knew the full story. But then it did come out in a book in as late as 1999.
Yeah.
A book called Rock Spider was published. My boyfriend was David at the time, and I had not been in contact with David for 20 years. And then David crossed my path again, and then he wrote, and he had a more closer experience of it being a boy.
Yeah.
And he had a closer idea, and he's a great story writer. I mean, he's really good at action. So he came along and showed me this. He goes, "Hey, what do you think of this? I wrote this quite a while ago as a treatment." And I said, "Wow, that's actually quite good. I'll put it in a script form for you if you want." He goes, "Yeah, all right." And then we just got rolling on it, and we just kept, we wouldn't stop. So we just roll. And I thought, oh, gosh, how am I going to make this? Like, the original story had the kids using drugs.
Mm.
So, you know, in general, it's obviously, you know, having kids engaged in this. But I said, I can't turn it away. I have to keep going. And then once we got support from the council and good fundraising from GoFundMe, you know, there was no turning back.
Thank you. And it's interesting you mentioned that, Tatiana. And actually, this is where I'll move on to Katrina, because I was thinking, that's the thing I was thinking. Of course, I've seen millions of films. Well, not millions, but thousands of films, and across all different subject matters have come through. And I always think that these kind of films where you're filming about a very difficult subject matter, it must be, I guess what I'm asking is there any point where you think, oh, you know, as you touched upon this, Tatiana, you know, how the hell am I going to do this? Where you kind of think, actually, can we do this? Because it needs to be done in a truthful way. Of course it does, as all films do. But even so, the subject matter is difficult. I mean, I wonder how much reservation there was. That question really is for you, Katrina, because, you know, I don't say there was sleepless nights, but was there points where you just thought, oh, I don't know, this is just going to be so difficult to make this?
Yeah, absolutely, Steve. It was not an easy film to make. And to be honest, it's one of the reasons why I kind of stepped in and said to Tatiana, do you need a hand? Because like Tatiana, I read the script early on. I mean, we're both filmmakers. We've known each other for decades and occasionally kind of go, hey, I'm working on this. Hey, what do you reckon? And Tatiana showed me that script and I went, oh, my God, first of all, hands down, you've got to make it. But second, you're going to need a hand. Like, you're going to need all the help that you can get, really, just for the permissions. I mean, we were shooting with a lead child cast with adult themes. We've got exterior night shoots in the heart of St Kilda in the height of summer, and it's set in the 1980s, so you can't see anything contemporary. We had stunts. You know, we've got the esteemed Ellery Ryan, who's on the call with us tonight, shooting it. So, you know, it's not going to be guerrilla style handheld either. We're going to have gaffer trucks and grips trucks and a proper crew, and we're doing it on a short film budget. So it was a supremely difficult film to make logistically, but the one thing I think all of us would agree that tied it together and got us through, because it was hard emotionally and physically, was that we all believed so much in telling the story and giving it care and respect, and giving these boys, not just for someone like David Markin, who wrote it with Tatiana, and the boys that he knew and everybody that grew up in St Kilda, but just also in a wider sense, people that have been through this sort of thing, to reclaim some dignity, I guess, to be able to tell their story and to make it quite poetic and beautiful as a piece, and then to be able to open up discussion about it. It's such a big issue still in this day and age. Obviously, it's
Yeah.
a lot of it's online. It's not just in the underground sort of seedy streets, if you like. So it was a combination of things, from being a compelling story that we all felt just had to be made, through to we all believe very much in each other's talents and skills and all those things as filmmakers and storytellers. And then, yeah, it was just blind faith, I guess, getting us from shoot day to shoot day and then through the edit, etc.
Thank you for that, Katrina. And Ellery, as a DOP, I mean this in the best way, what I'm about to say, but it may not sound that way. The film has a really kind of bleak, sort of nihilistic look about it. And that sounds terrible. I'm sorry. And what I mean by that
No,
is,
that's good.
and thank you. And what I was trying to, and don't get me wrong, it's beautifully filmed. When you first become involved in a project, any project, but obviously in this film in particular, do you kind of know very quickly the look, or let me sort of step back from that. At what point do you know the kind of look that you think the filmmaker would want? And was this film storyboarded? And if it was, does that help you?
Let me answer the last two things first. It wasn't storyboarded, and I often think that storyboarding is a bit limiting. You have to do it for things like stunts and car crashes and dangerous things, but I think shot lists are better than storyboarding. Put that aside. How do I get to an idea of the look? It's really in collaboration with the director. You read the script, and I always try to read a script a couple of times without any, like reading a book, like reading as if this was a movie. Do I like it? Do I not like it? And let it kind of wash over you, and then put it aside for a little bit, come back to it, and slowly but surely a feeling about it starts to come through. And this, it's a tough film. It's a bleak film.
It is, yeah.
I thought, look, what the one thing it doesn't need is a kind of happy, happy, or even a neutral feel. It needs to feel tough and bleak. And, you know, that's a kind of right down basic feeling. And I think Tatiana had the same ideas. Now, I don't know who came up with the black and white scenario. But it really, really, you think,
Yeah, it lends
yeah,
itself well. Yeah, it does.
this is right. You know, it would be wrong in a way to have that tough old 1986 St Kilda down at heel suburb portrayed in kind of colour. It really felt like you're looking back at something that's real, but it's so tough that you want a little filter between you and it. And I think the black and white was it. And the other stuff, it comes with having a look at the locations. It comes with talking with the director and the producer and the production designer. And it comes to you slowly. It's never, or I don't think I've ever had, or maybe with one film, but virtually never had, I know what this film's going to look like the moment I read the script. It's a slow process.
Right, thank you.
But I'd say I had a very clear idea of what I wanted visually, and Ellery was perfect match. Like, he was just totally in tune with what I was thinking. But I, when I was visualising it, it was very, very close to what we got. Like, Ellery was just doing what I was seeing. So, yeah.
Yana also had an incredible kind of mood board, if you like, and had already made a little kind of very low budget teaser that gave you an indication of the style and the kind of the sense of very long shots, beautifully composed shots with tension in them. So you could tell even before we put the package together that it was not only a good story, but it was going to be handled with great care. So a lot of that work comes from where Tatiana had sort of done that groundwork before we started.
And can we just talk about the child actors in this? Oh, sorry, Ellery. Yes, but yeah, please carry on.
I'd forgotten about that, you know, mood board. I sneer at mood boards mostly because I associate them with art directors and commercials. But the truth is that mood board really set me. I thought, wow, I see this film now a little bit. And not as though we followed they're just feelings. They're shots of things or their paintings or their colours or whatever. But that really did set us on the right path. And I agree with Katrina. Once I saw that, I started to get a feel for where this was going. I just wanted to throw that in. I'd forgotten about the mood boards.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm famous for my, well, don't want to put the moz on it, but I do win people with my mood boards so far. Like, I'll get the DOPs on board, they like them. So far, they're working.
I have to say, Ellery, you do remind me of Ridley Scott. You do have a look about him that's very similar to him. And interesting,
Elvis.
A very quick story. You probably know it's a very famous story that when he got the gig to do Alien, he went, because he's a brilliant artist, I'm sure you know this, and he went in and drew storyboards, and with the storyboards doubled the budget. So you just don't know how things are rolled out. But anyway, I digress.
He's someone who does a good storyboard.
He's a brilliant, I know. Look, believe me, I don't know the first thing about filmmaking, so my hat's off to all of you. So if we could just talk about the child actors. I mean, you already know it's going to be a hard-hitting theme, but then you've got to find the children to be in the film, of course. So, I mean, on that in itself is going to be, I guess, a tricky thing because of the subject matter. So can you explain how you found the kids to be in this film? You know, what was the process? How difficult it was? I mean, they're all brilliant in it, of course.
It was very difficult, obviously. We tried to find kids who were over 16 to see if they could. But, look, that would be, you could comb the earth, and I think, you know, maybe you could find four kids who looked a lot younger than what they were. But we couldn't. And they had to be below 16 because the truth about pedophiles is that they don't want the kids. Once the kids reach puberty, they no longer want them. So you have to have them at that age. And so we had to trawl through mostly modelling agents, because kids at that age haven't got much of a repertoire with acting. So generally, if you're going to find them, you'll get them in modelling agencies. And that was a tip-off we got. And there was two agents that were really helpful. A lot of them, people rejected it. They said, no, it's too heavy. I can't have that. Or the agents wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Obviously. So we had to trawl and trawl and trawl. And we did video auditions first. And the relationships with the parents was really important too. And that's where Katrina was brilliant. You know, there's no way I could have done that alone while being a creative and having to manage the huge effort of having to manage the parents. But the kids who end up doing it, like one of them, they got family members in the police force, and they had experience in some way or another with the story, so they believed in the story.
Yeah.
And said, yes, it has to be made. And then there was the whole protocols then that we had to go through with the child employment office, which made it hugely complicated. And I knew at the time, I mean, I've worked in community services and child protection for many years, so I knew straight off and that it's going to be difficult, and we knew we're up for a big deal. But, you know, they and they had just released a whole lot of new guidelines and they're getting more and more stringent. And Brendan Campbell also said, oh, my God, they're going to be all over this, a nightmare to get through this, to get the permission to do it. So we had to end up altering the script somewhat and removing certain things. So that was extremely difficult to do while we're in the middle of the, just about to go on set. So we had a whole lot of complications because it was brand new for them as well.
And it's fair to say that we got the most amazing cast in the end, and they bonded like you wouldn't believe, and all the parents are still great mates, and it certainly worked out in the end. But, yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Tatiana, just jumping in.
Yeah, no, that's all right. I was going to wrap up. So the, and they're all pleased with it now and they're all fine with it. But, yeah, maybe Katrina can talk to the permit, working with the permit office.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was obviously probably the biggest thing to try and work out with this film was trying to find the right cast and the right parents, and then navigating that with the permissions. We have very strict regulations here in Victoria and Melbourne for employing children in any work sense, let alone on a film set and let alone in an adult-themed film. Consequently, you know, at this stage of the film, while it's out there in the festival circuit, we can't even credit the kids' names. We can't use their faces in publicity, you know, and that's for their protection. Agents and casting directors and other producers can get in contact with us and we can share that information because we want them to get work because they're amazing. But, you know, yeah, we started with the traditional methods. I had worked a little bit in casting and I've been an actor for many years as well, so I've got a good relationship with casting directors. So I phoned a lot of casting directors that I knew and asked their opinion, and a couple of them gave us letters of support to say, you know, these guys are not renegade, they're the real deal, they're not gonna do the wrong thing. And we got a lot of industry support as well from some pretty senior producers who'd done a lot of work with children, and that helped us to get a little bit of confidence. But like Tatiana said, some agents just said, look, I know you're doing it with good intention, but I just can't send this brief to a parent and say, would you like to audition? So it was a real catch-22, but in the end we were just blessed with the kids that we found. We could not have asked for the better cast than we got. And we spent a fair bit of time in the early auditions talking to the parents. But then we also had a lot of protection things in place as well. Like we had a version of the script that was kid-friendly. So it gave you the essence of the story for the sake of the drama, but it didn't have some of the stuff that kids shouldn't read because it's not appropriate. But the parents could read it. So the parents had a version of we're not holding back on anything. If you want to ask us anything, you just ring us and ask us, because we wanted them to feel very comfortable. And then we had a script that the kids were allowed to read. We even ended up filming, oh, don't even start me on this one, we ended up filming like what we call the grandma-friendly version of the film. So we changed a couple of lines of dialogue in order to get a couple of things shot so that the kids could be on set at the same time, because there are some scenes, like the one in the car, for example, there's a bloke in the car and the youngest kid.
Is that with the money? Each hand's
the money? Where the money changes hands, which is sort of the worst thing that we see on screen in that scene. But in that scene, we didn't film that at the same time. That adult actor was acting with one of the crew members, pretending to be the kid. And the day that the kid came in, we didn't even read the adult dialogue. The little kid was hearing a piece of dialogue that was about, can I have a camera to go and take some photos on the beach? We didn't even have that, you know, money changing hands aspect. So when his hand goes out, that's a stunt actor is used a lot of the time for the hand. So there were lots of sort of things like that that were in place to protect, particularly the youngest children. The older children were a little bit you know, able to understand a little bit more, but there's a reference. Yeah, there are some references in the dialogue that the kids say that we also had to construct in post-production. So we wrote a poem that we got the kids to read that was an absolute nonsensical poem that gave us the phonetic sounds that the post-production team could then construct the sentence in post-production. So the child actor never had to say anything awkward.
Yeah, a lot of the swear words were constructed.
All the swear words were swapped around. You know, they all said frickin' on set and we changed it. Yeah, so there were lots and lots and lots of things like that that were in place to make sure that the kids felt very comfortable. But they're all very smart kids with very smart parents. And we also had to go through quite a stringent psychology assessment for each child to make sure that, you know, we forgot about that, right? Oof, last minute sort of psychologists being brought in to make sure that the kids didn't have anything in their background that was likely to be triggered. That they were in a good space mentally, that they had good support and friendship networks and they engaged in sport and they were good at school and they really did want to be an actor and they were smart enough to understand that they weren't being used and they weren't going to turn around a year from now or a year after shooting saying they felt exploited because we made a film that was about something that they didn't understand. So we got loads of advice from child psychologists from many different areas, and we had a child psychologist. We had a counsellor on set the whole time. We had a psych nurse on set the whole time with the kids as our chaperone. And I ring the parents about every 6 months just to go, hey, how are you going? How are the kids? They're still acting? What's going on? You know, so it's not just a film. It was we've formed a family.
It was a mission. It was a mission.
It was a mission.
It was a commission. So can I ask each of you, what's happening? What are you working on now? Is there anything I'm sure that you're doing other stuff, but if you give us a flavour of what's next. Ellery, may I start? You're smiling, so you've obviously got a big budget blockbuster from Hollywood loom.
Right, Steve. We're just coming out of lockdown as we speak. And in Victoria, where we are, it's been one of the most restrictive lockdowns in Australia, meaning that commercials, short films, dramas, documentaries, there has been nothing for, well, it seems like 20 years, but I guess it's been about 18 months or so. Yep. Yeah. So a lot of people have gone into state or overseas, and a film that I was hoping to do in the Northern Territory, it's in abeyance, but maybe, you know, the whole thing, once you put that sort of thing on hold, what about your principal actors? What about this? What about that? It's hard to reconstruct it again. So we're really just picking up the pieces around about now and looking to the horizon, I guess. For me, I wish I could say, anyone out there, give me a call.
Okay, thank you for that, Ellery. Katrina.
So I just take you off mute because my dog was barking. Honestly, I'm spending quite a bit of time just managing some film festivals for Miss Anima to try and get it out there. And I also work with a number of other filmmakers to help with their film festival strategies. So I've got a few short films that I'm kind of managing. And then I do a whole lot of multimedia bits and pieces for paying the bills and things like that. And creatively, I write and do a bit of filmmaking and stuff like that as well. So I've always got something on the go. But, I think probably a little like Ellery, a lot of things that might have happened have all been paused due to the world's longest lockdown in Melbourne. Yeah. And now we're coming out going, oh, my goodness, it's nearly November. I better look at the Christmas shopping list and go and have a drink with someone.
Okay. Hey, believe me, okay, we haven't had as tough in the UK, but it's still been pretty dire here, although we've managed an amazing rollout, to be fair. Even with that, you know, we're still doing virtual festivals because it's just too risky, you know, at the moment. And finally, Tatiana, finally to you, if you could let us know what you're up to, please.
I'm trying to do my first feature. I think I've decided that I haven't really given it a bash. I know I should have many years ago, but I'm now well into it and it's good. It's coming along fine, the first draft. So I'm just going to put myself behind that and I'm doing another little basic short. I'm trying to get this very simple short, which is, you know, really low budget, really simple, really, really, really just, you know, voiceover over vision. So that's just sort of creatively keeping my engines rolling. So I'm doing that. When I get my first draft in good shape, I've started to pitch it to some producers and I've got some interest, but I'm still, you know, still going to get behind. I'm still going to get behind it a lot more. And get a finished problem.
Okay, so thank you very much to all of you. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk with you, as always. And the group chats, I love them. I really love them because you always get so many people bouncing around with different things. But yeah, I just wanted to say it's been amazing to talk to you. So thank you very, very much.
Thanks, Steve. Thank you. I know also Bernie Clifford, who was our other producer, would have liked to be here today too. But shout out to him because he was a rock through the production, as was everybody involved. But thanks for having us. Thanks for programming the film.
No, you're more than welcome. Okay, thank you very much and take care to all of you.
Yes, bye, thank you so much. That's bye-bye. Awesome.
Bye-bye.
If you would like to submit to one of our festivals, please go to www.fusionfilmfestivals.com.